Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. The House Judiciary Committee held an oversight hearing recently on police practices and law enforcement accountability. We're going to hear some testimony from that on today's show. First, here's Benjamin Crump. He's a civil rights attorney and the founder of the national law firm Ben Crump Law. Mr. Crump is the attorney for the family of George Floyd.
I know all the speakers have 5 minutes to speak, but I wish it was 8 minutes and 46 seconds, not as a symbolic gesture, but as an actual exact time reference of how long George Floyd literally begged. He literally narrated a documentary of his death, begging for his life, saying, "I can't breathe," and calling for his mama. The death of George Floyd has galvanized the world and mobilized Americans to demand a more just system of policing, because it's become painfully obvious that what we have right now are two systems of justice, one for white Americans and another for black Americans. George is one in a long line of black Americans who unjustly are killed at the hands of police, or in George's case, at the knee of the police, including Breonna Taylor, Pamela Turner, Botham Jones, Michael Brown, Stephon Clark, Eric Gardner, Tamir Rice, Philando Castile, Terrence Crutcher, Laquan McDonald, just to name a few. And the list goes on and on. But it is important, Mr. Chairman, that we remember their names. It's way past time that we revise the role of police to become peacekeepers and community partners. Of course, they must be prepared to protect themselves and the public in direct life-threatening situations. But these should be the exception and not the rule. What we are witnessing throughout our country is not that. Americans are being tear gassed in the streets, hit with rubber bullets, shoved violently to the ground, cracking their skulls against the pavement, being bloodied with batons. And for what? For demanding justice for black Americans. Our constitutional rights are under attack, and not in the shadows, but in the broad daylight. Changing the behavior of police and their relationships with people of color starts at the top. We need a national standard for policing behavior built on transparency and accountability. The only reason we know what happened to George Floyd is because it was captured on video. The advent of video evidence is bringing into the light what long was hidden. It's revealing what black Americans have known for a long, long time, that it is dangerous for a black person to have an encounter with a police officer. Given the incidents that have led to this moment in time, it should be mandatory for police officers to wear body cams and should be considered obstruction of justice to turn them off. Like a black box data recorder in an airplane, body cams replace competing narratives with a single narrative, the truth, with what we see with our own eyes. Second, insist that police officers only use the level of force needed based on the level of threat actually posed by the circumstances. We've seen way too many black people shot in the back, or unarmed black people shot and killed, or a handcuffed black man face down on the pavement, asphyxiated by a knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, though he posed no threat at all. Neck restraints were used by Minnesota police more than 200 times, resulting in suspects losing consciousness at least 44 times. Lethal restraints like chokeholds and strangleholds should be outlawed. Finally, reform how qualified immunity applies to police officers. If officers know they have immunity, they act with impunity. If officers know they can unjustly take the life of a black person with no accountability, they will continue to do so. That's what you saw in the eyes of Derek Chauvin with his hand casually tucked in his pocket as he extinguished the life of George Floyd. Accountability requires that officers face public consequences for unjustly taking a life or brutalizing a fellow American that are sworn they are sworn to protect and serve. Too often, many officers are silent in the face of evil because of the blue shield. The Brotherhood of Police Officers, which fosters systematic racism and abuse. But there's a higher brotherhood that God calls us to honor. The brotherhood of mankind, black and white. That's what we're witnessing in the diversity of the protesters filling our streets, even today. And that's the brotherhood our police officers must honor above all. The founding fathers knew they had not built the infallible system, a faultless union, but they did task us with the perpetual duty to aim for it, a more perfect union of justice, liberty, resilience, hope, and compassion. We have to do better, and we must strive to live up to those American ideals. We are better than this. Chairman, members of the committee, you have the power to make this moment in history the tipping point so many of us have been waiting for, fighting for, and praying for, that Americans are marching for. You have the power to make sure that George Floyd's death is not in vain. I've been asking for us to take a breath. Number one, the breath that George Floyd was denied. Secondly, take a breath to consider how we use police in our society and how we hold them accountable for the tremendous power we place in their hands. Thirdly, to take a breath to consider how we create a more perfect union that extends equal protection and equal justice to people of color. And finally, to take a breath for George Floyd because his life mattered and Black Lives Matter.
That was Ben Crump, a civil rights attorney who represents the family of George Floyd, the man who was murdered by Minneapolis police on May 25th. This is Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Paul Butler is the Albert Brick Professor in Law at Georgetown University Law Center and a legal analyst on MSNBC. Professor Butler served as a federal prosecutor with the U.S. Department of Justice, where his specialty was public corruption.
Mr. Floyd and Ms. Underwood Jacobs, I'm so sorry for your loss. May the memory of your brothers, the memory of the other martyrs, be a blessing to the people all over the country, all over the world, who are rising up in what Martin Luther King called the beautiful struggle for equal justice. There has never, not for one minute in American history, been peace between Black people and the police. And nothing since slavery has sparked the level of outrage among African Americans as when they feel under violent attack by the police. Black people have endured Jim Crow segregation, being shut out of Social Security and the GI Bill, massive resistance to school desegregation, nonstop efforts to prevent us from voting, and poison water. But the rare times Black people have set aside traditional civil rights strategies and instead have risen in the streets, destroyed property, and resisted symbols of the state has been because of something that the police have done. Watts in 65, Newark in 67, Miami 1980, LA 1992, Ferguson 2015, Baltimore 2016, Minneapolis in 2020. All of those cities went up in flames because the police killed another Black man. Unlawful violence is never acceptable, either as a misguided approach of a few or as an abuse of the power and trust we place in law enforcement officers. The main problem is not bad apple cops. Officers have difficult jobs and many serve with honor and valor. Still, almost every objective investigation of a police department finds that police, as policy, treat African Americans with contempt. The police kill, wound, pepper spray, beat up, detain, frisk, handcuffs, and use dogs against Black people in circumstances in which they do not do the same to white people. When armed agents of the state are harming American citizens in our name, we the people must ask why. In the past 2 weeks, we've seen acts of grace and bravery by police officers. Cops in New York took a knee. In Houston, Chief Acevedo arranged for an honor guard to accompany Mr. Floyd's body when he came home. Unfortunately, we have also witnessed these past 2 weeks, police officers commit deplorable acts of violence against the citizens they've sworn to serve and protect. In New York, officers drove two large police vehicles into a crowd of protesters. In Atlanta, officers broke the window of a car, dragged out two college students, and shot them with a stun gun in Buffalo. A police officer knocked a 75-year-old man to the ground, but what happened next was just as bad. When two officers were disciplined for that criminal conduct, 57 other officers quit the squad in protest. President Obama's task force on policing decried the warrior mentality present among too many law enforcement officers. In Buffalo, the nation saw warriors on steroids. African American and Hispanic people disproportionately bear the cost. Blacks are about 20% of the population of Minneapolis, but 60% of the people who cops use violence against. The result is that there are more Black people in the criminal legal system today than there were slaves in 1850, when I mentioned to a young man I mentor that if he attended protests, he should wear a mask. He said he certainly would try, but he wanted me to know that as a young Black man, he has a greater risk of dying from police violence than from the coronavirus. According to the National Academy of Science, 1 in 1,000 African American men and boys will be killed by the police. What African Americans need to realize equal justice under the law is for selective enforcement and police brutality to end. We need the police to stop killing us, to stop beating us up, to stop arresting us in situations in which they would not do those things to white people. The Justice and Policing Act is a common sense reform. Among other things, it requires cops to be trained on understanding racial bias. In Minneapolis, as three officers crushed the life out of Mr. Floyd, and another served as a lookout, somebody in the crowd said to the cops, "He's human, bro." But these four officers did not treat Mr. Floyd like a human being. Too often, police work seems to enforce the dehumanization of people of color. Understanding the history and reality of racism in the United States will make our men and women in blue more effective officers. In the end, this hearing is about the legitimacy and sustainability of our democracy. No justice, no peace is not a threat. It is simply a description of how the world works. The multiracial, multigenerational demonstrations that have risen up all over the United States reflect the wonderful diversity of our great nation and the potential of ordinary citizens to make our country live up to its highest ideals. The Justice and Policing Act of 2020 heralds the urgency of transformation and the promise for all Americans of equal justice under the law.
That was Professor Paul Butler, a former federal prosecutor who is currently the Albert Brick Professor in Law at Georgetown University Law Center. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now here's Professor Butler outlining his Ten Commandments for Black Men.
If you're an African-American man, police and prosecutors are coming for you. I know this because I was a prosecutor. It was my job to lock up black men. I am also a black man, and cops treat me like one. I've been stopped and frisked more times than I can count, thrown against a cop car twice, and worst of all, I was arrested and prosecuted for a crime I didn't commit. I beat my case because I know how to work the system. Now I want you to know what I know. I can't take back all those brothers who I locked up, but now I'm a law professor at Georgetown, and I can help people avoid the chokehold of police and prosecutors. Here are the Ten Commandments for Black Men. This is real talk for how to get the police to leave you alone, and if you do catch a case, how to deal with a system that is out to get you. These tips are focused on black men, but we're not the only people who get mistreated. Black women and other groups also have big problems, and these Ten Commandments will work for them too. Stop and frisk is a joke. Stop and frisk is when the cops roll up and pat you down. The law says they can't do that unless they have reasonable suspicion. The street says 12 can stop you for almost anything. Police don't need a real reason, and in many cases, they just make one up. Here are some of the things cops tell me make them start looking at a brother hard. A black man in a black SUV. Three or more black men in a car. A black man running. A black man with a white woman. A black man in a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. I'm not saying don't do these things. I'm just saying be aware of the biases we face as black men. And if you don't want to deal with the cops, act like you know. Keep your cool. An arrest will change your life. So be smart when the police stop you. If you get stopped, the cop wants to dominate you. You have to play along if you want to avoid an arrest. You have to give them that respect, even if they don't deserve it. Say, "Officer, sir, and ma'am." Ask politely.
"Officer, am I free to go?"
If they say no, don't curse or lose your cool. That will only make things worse. Don't admit to anything. Cops lie. If they say, "Just tell us what you did and we'll let you go."
Don't trust that.
If they say, "We know it was self-defense."
Don't trust that.
If they say, "We know you were just holding it for somebody else."
Definitely do not trust that.
If they ask if they can search you and you have anything on you, just say no. People do that and it's stupid. You trying to get locked up or what? You have the right to shut the hell up. Everybody's heard of Miranda rights.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you tell police can be used against you in a court. You have the right to an attorney. If you can't afford a lawyer, one will be provided for you.
If the police don't read you your rights, that's not a get out of jail free card. It just means they can't use your statement against you if you go to trial. If the cops arrest you, you can't talk your way out. That didn't even work for me, and I was a prosecutor. The best thing to do is shut the hell up. Repeat like a sample. If they read you your rights, say this and nothing but this.
"I invoke my right to silence and my right to a lawyer. I will not talk to you without a lawyer."
If the cops keep trying, say it again.
I invoke my right to silence and my right to a lawyer. I will not talk to you without a lawyer.
Don't say another freaking word about the case. Call your mother. If you do get locked up, they usually let you make a call. If you have a lawyer, call them first. If not, call your mom, your girl, a boy, your cousin, anyone that'll stop what they're doing to deal with the mess your life has just become. So you have a public defender? Chill. A lot of times they have way more courthouse experience than a paid lawyer. But let's keep it real. Some appointed lawyers are lousy. And if you have major concerns about your appointed counsel, there comes a time to hire a paid lawyer, especially if the charges are serious. Here are three things a good defense attorney should do for you. Thing one, your lawyer should file a motion for your release. They should ask the judge to dismiss the case. You'll probably lose. Judges almost never drop cases. But in the hearing, your lawyer will learn more about the prosecution's case. And if the cops don't show up, the case might get dismissed. Thing two, your lawyer should ask the prosecutor for discovery and Brady. If your lawyer says, "What's that?" run for the hills, my dude. Thing three, your lawyer should hire an investigator. This way you can get a version of the facts that doesn't come straight from the police. To snitch or not to snitch? That is the question. The prosecution might offer you a deal. If you're thinking about snitching, you're going to want to check off three boxes first. Nobody gets hurt. Don't snitch if somebody's going to get got. It's worth it. Don't snitch unless you get to go home or get less time. It's the right thing to do. Don't snitch if you have to lie or incriminate somebody you care about. Dress to impress. When I was a prosecutor, we used to crack up at how some defendants dressed in court. They made our jobs easy because they looked guilty. Baggy pants, white t-shirt, gold chain, sneakers. When a black man has his fate in the hands of a judge or jury, he needs to wear a suit and polished shoes. Trust me, bro, judges and juries notice. Take the stand or take the fifth. If you go to trial, taking the stand is your decision, but be sure to listen to your lawyer's advice. Understand that a good prosecutor can make an innocent person look guilty. That's why your lawyer might want you to take the fifth. If you choose to testify, keep your answers short and to the point. The prosecutor will try to get you heated. Don't fall for it. Throw yourself in the mercy of the court. Let's say you lose. Sorry, my dude. A lot of brothers have been in this situation. More than 500,000 at this very moment, to be exact. So what's next? Your sentencing. Time for the most important performance of your life. Get your teachers, boss, and pastor to write letters. Then have them and your whole family, except kids, show up in court. When judges see people there for you, in your corner, it helps. Prepare a statement where you say you're sorry. This judge has your whole life in their hands. You gotta get them to see the whole you, not just what happened on that horrible day when you caught this case. If this all feels like a horror flick, that's how the criminal legal process is for African Americans. The country that black men live in is not free. The next time you see those flashing lights or the cops step up to you in the street, remember these commandments. The black man in the horror movie is usually the first to die. You can be that brother who survives.
That was Professor Paul Butler with his Ten Commandments for Black Men. Audio came to us courtesy of the Georgetown University Law Center. Now, while we still have time, let's hear from Dr. Philip Goff. Philip Atiba Goff, Ph.D., is the inaugural Franklin A. Thomas Professor in Policing Equity at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He's co-founder and president of the Center for Policing Equity, and he's an expert in contemporary forms of racial bias and discrimination, as well as the intersections of race and gender.
I have to say that what we have seen in the streets of the United States over the past 2 weeks nearly defies description. Some have called it massive protest, others have called it a riot. Others have called it a revolution. What I am confident is that what we have seen has been larger than the incident that sparked collective outrage and is still tearing at the fabric of our democracy. What has spilled out onto the streets of this nation is even larger than our grief at the brutal extinction of George Floyd's life and the life of the 1,000 citizens per year killed by police, a number that has not changed significantly since newspapers began cataloging those numbers in 2015. What we're seeing on the streets of the United States is a past due notice for the unpaid debts owed to black people for 400 plus years. If the responses to this moment are not proportional to that debt, I fear we will continue to pay it with interest again and again and again. Turning to the complex issue of police reform, I applaud the work of Chairman Nadler and Congresswoman Bass for putting forth a comprehensive proposal to rethink how we best hold law enforcement accountable to the ideal of equality. The Justice and Policing Act of 2020 contains a number of critical reforms, including banning neck restraints and creating a national registry of police misconduct. In my capacity at CPE, however, I want to spend a moment focusing on what science says about bias in policing. I feel it's important to set a baseline, especially with all of the false information circulating in media, given the general vacuum in the ecosystem on evidence in this area. First, there is no doubt that Black, Native, and Latinx people in this country have more contact with law enforcement than do white people. There's also relative agreement that where there are fewer public services, so fewer drug treatment, mental health, job training programs, law enforcement has more contact with residents. There is evidence of racial bias in who was contacted by police and who was targeted for force. However, it is also the case that clearly not all the disparities we see are from police policy or behavior. It is some, but not all. Given this understanding of bias in policing, what are we to do? As we've already heard today, the most recent debate is between institutional reform and defunding the police. While there is no quantitative research literature on abolishing policing, there are reasons to believe that many within Black communities are not fully aligned with this vision. Historical and polling research reveal that Black communities support less biased and less deadly law enforcement more than eliminating it. With the mood of the nation changing so quickly, so too may these attitudes. And still, to the degree that a path forward involves using police budgets to invest in Black communities, the process must be led by evidence. Evidence about what programs work, both in policing and in communities, and evidence about where cities can safely receive a higher return on their investment in community empowerment. And regardless, there is no need to wait for a decision on police budgets to invest in our most vulnerable communities. Wherever the country lands on police budgets, we can all agree that communities that have the resources to solve their own problems and do not need to call the police in the first place are safer communities that are better equipped to realize the American dream. There is no reason to avoid this obvious truth, and there is no reason not to act on it now.
That was Professor Philip Atiba Goff, Ph.D., co-founder and president of the Center for Policing Equity. He was testifying before the House Judiciary Committee at an oversight hearing on police practices and law enforcement accountability. And for now, that's it. I want to thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Many thanks to our engineer, and a heartfelt thanks to you, dear listener, for joining us. You make it all worth it. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.
Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard.